China is never out of the news, and in the past week the stories have been big ones. Nathan van der Klip is joining us, our China correspondent and the Asia correspondent for the Globe and Mail based in Beijing. Good morning.
Good morning.
New confirmed cases of coronavirus remain stable in Beijing as officials say situation is under control. That's the latest headline I read. What's your impression of the resurgence of the virus where you are?
Well, it's kind of remarkable what's taken place in Beijing this week. I mean, we've had hundreds of thousands of people being tested, neighborhoods locked down. We've had individual apartment complexes locked down. We've had this just extraordinary response to somewhat less than 200 cases that have emerged. And keep in mind, you know, Beijing's a city of 20-plus million people. But I think it just goes to show how much fear there is about the contagious potential of this particular virus. Beijing became sort of China's new Wuhan. I mean, other provinces put on travel restrictions for people coming from Beijing. Right now, people cannot leave Beijing for neighboring provinces without having a negative nucleic acid test for COVID-19. So it's quite an extraordinary response over a small number of cases. That said, I mean, Beijing had gone nearly 2 months without any new sort of domestically sourced cases, and to see this sort of spread has clearly spooked the authorities.
Yes, the implications of this for a country like ours, for example, Nathan, because how much virus exactly was abroad in Beijing before this flare-up? None.
Well, I mean, so this is the thing. I mean, there are so many asymptomatic cases that it's very hard to know. For other countries, I think, looking at this, the question is, if you have new cases that emerge, do you have the ability to do sufficient testing to convince yourself that you have found everybody who is carrying the virus at that moment and to be able to quarantine them off from the rest of the population?
The ghastly, almost prehistoric clash between Indian and Chinese troops on the high border in the Galwan Valley area, 20 Indian soldiers killed with nail-studded sticks used. What are the rights and wrongs, Nathan, of who can go where along this line of actual control, as it's called?
Well, I think it starts with what is the line of actual control. And there are different definitions of that on both sides. And that I think is at the heart of this, which is that the idea behind the line of actual control is it's something that goes through disputed territory, territory that both sides claim is their own. The Chinese have said the Indians came onto their territory twice. The Indian side has said the Chinese were building pieces of infrastructure on the Indian side. And the Indians are saying the Chinese are now claiming the entire Galwan Valley based on historical claims dating back to the Qing dynasty in ways that they've not done before. What you could fall back on is what was the status quo. Where had people been lined up? And so you have a situation now where, from the Indian perspective, and in India, the reaction to this has been extraordinary. I mean, there's been burning of effigies, there's been burning of flags, the calls for boycotts, there's been like public smashings of Huawei phones and all the rest. In China, by contrast, I mean, there's been a real effort to tamp down the conversation. There's been very little mention of it in state media. But for the Indian side in particular, there's a sense that politically now, given how much public sentiment there is over this, the only possible solution is to go back to exactly where things were before. And so we'll see how that goes.
Yeah, it doesn't sound like much of a long-term solution, does it? That phrase you just used, in ways they haven't done before. China says it's found insects in Canadian logs, raising fears that Beijing's targeting another key Canadian export. It's denying it's behind this sophisticated state-sponsored cyber attack targeting Australian government and business and political organisations. This wolf-warrior approach to its relationships in the world now, what's it achieving? I mean, would that be fully sanctioned, or are things getting a little out of control within the bureaucracy?
I think there is no question that it is fully sanctioned. We heard directly a couple of weeks ago a press conference with Wang Yi, the Chinese foreign minister, in which he was asked directly about this wolf warrior diplomacy, in which he basically said, if you attack China, we will attack back. As far as the effectiveness of it, from the perspective of countries like Canada and Australia and New Zealand and others, you have a sense that China's conduct, and it's not just that, but across Europe as well, you have a sense that China's conduct is alienating people, is angering people, is causing coalitions to build against China. You've now got this new talk of a quad coalition that involves India and Japan and Australia and the U.S. in opposition to China. So all of these things are happening, which would seem to suggest that the Chinese approach is backfiring. My sense is what China is trying to do is trying to raise the perceived price of conduct that Beijing does not view favorably. If there is an increased perception of risk of doing things that cross Beijing, then I think you have to ask yourself, is this potentially a successful strategy? You know, is there a long-term gain for China despite all of the short-term anger that some of this conduct is causing? And I think it feels as if some of the goals in some of the measures that China is taking are targeted at countries over which China believes it has an ability to exert some influence and are intended in some ways to create cracks between those countries and the ways in which they might be aligned with the U.S., which, of course, is the primary source of China's concern right now.
Yeah, understood. Well, the coronavirus was always going to shake up the world, wasn't it? Politically and socially as well as economically. You've been in the game long enough to have good instincts, even though the outcome you've just been talking about is unclear. We are walking on a road that's getting kind of rockier all the time, seemingly.
Our newspaper did a piece a month or two ago looking at in which ways will the world change from the coronavirus. And my contribution to that was to say, I think this virus is really going to kick off in earnest. The coronavirus has really brought together and firmed up this notion of opposing camps. So there's all this language of a new Cold War. I'm hesitant to use that language because it's a very imperfect analogy. But this idea of a China and its friends on one side and the U.S. and the U.S.-dominated world on the other side, and cleavages between those, it feels like those are being accentuated by what we're seeing with this coronavirus. And at the moment, I mean, there just doesn't seem to be a path forward that results in sort of bridging those divides, but there seem to be plenty of paths forward that result in accentuating those divides. So my sense is that we are heading towards a less cooperative, more suspicious world. And some of that, I think, already has echoes of what we saw for, you know, many decades between the U.S. and its allies and the Soviet Union.
Mm. Nathan, thank you for that analysis. Always good to talk with you. Appreciate your time.
You're very welcome.
Nathan van der Klip in Beijing.